back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Text line, we'll try to get in before we wrap up, 251-343-0106. Joining us now, he is our returning champion. We do this every week with him. State Senator Chris Elliott joins us on the line. Senator, how are you?
I am doing great. It's been nice to be in the district in Baldwin County all week long. It's been a nice change.
Well, let me ask you, how's the reelection going?
Well, it's looking really good. We have been out knocking on doors with a good team of folks and have knocked over 14,000 doors. And so that's been good. We've got our mailers going out and our TVs up and running and radios up and running. And so, you know, all of that is working as planned and the reception's great. And when you got a good, strong conservative record and a proven ability to bring back our fair share of tax dollars, it works out pretty well. So I'm very optimistic. Feel good about it.
You're probably the know on this. Talk to us about the new ICW bridge and what to expect there.
Yeah, so that's opening right here before Memorial Day, probably a week or so before Memorial Day. You know, that total project cost by the time you do the connector road is bumping $100 million of state funding spent in the district, which is, you know, part of that our share thing. The Department of Transportation chose the design and the flow method. It's not necessarily what I may have done, but they've decided to do it that way, where that new bridge will be southbound traffic only, and the old toll bridge, which is no longer a toll bridge, which is really saving some of my constituents thousands of dollars a year in tolls, which is a big change, will be northbound only. And so you'll peel off to the right on that new road when you go south, and it'll spit you out on Canal Road with a roundabout there, and you can choose to go east or west from there. And then the new bridge, or excuse me, the old toll bridge will be the northbound only there by the wharf and the Margaritaville.
All right. Well, I mean, that's I'll be curious to see how the public at large, you know, kind of adapts to it. You know, I can't imagine it's just going to be like flipping a light switch.
No, it's not. But it's going to be fairly straightforward as to how you do it. And then it's like anything else. We'll, you know, I don't know how it's going to work. The traffic engineers have decided that this is what's, you know, what they needed to do. And so we'll see. Proof's in the pudding. You know, my job is to go get the tax dollars to spend in the district. And so whether it's that bridge, certainly on one end of the district, or the Tensaw River Bridge that's at the other extreme of my district, another, you know, probably $45 million investment there. We are building roads and bridges in Baldwin County. That is for sure.
What about the other end of the Beach Express? There's been some talk about that. There's been some movement, it sounds like. What's the long-term outlook on getting from Buc-ee's to I-65?
It looks really good. And so the county commission, at my urging, has started acquiring that right-of-way, which is very important. That takes a long time to do. It is a long process. And so they started moving forward with that. There's also some discussion of building a portion of that road up at the north part there, next to the Novellis project and the mega site there. And so that would connect from I-65 to 31. And then that track, or that the rest of that road, that 31 back east to Bay Minette, all the way south I-10 is next on the list to do. That's probably a state project, but if we can get the next governor to, you know, red in on what needs to happen there, the fact that we've already gotten ALDOT to take over the entirety of the Foley Beach Express and the Baldwin Beach Express, that kind of shows where we're headed with this, to connect that and make that all one corridor, one state road from I-65 all the way to the beach. The big deal about getting the state to take over that road, again, is, you know, bringing home those tax dollars, but that means that the county and the city of Foley don't have to maintain that road anymore. That was a huge expense to maintain that. And so the county and the city showed a lot of initiative in getting it done and getting it started. We'll do the same with the northern portion of the Beach Express, but we want to get that on the state's rolls as quickly as possible so that our local governments aren't bearing that expense. And so that's the long-term plan for that.
Talk to me about this, the Matt Simpson, Greg Allbritton effort on the solar farms. You know, there's been a lot of talk about that this week, this off week. What's your take?
Yeah, I'm afraid that they were probably a little bit too late in getting those pieces of legislation introduced. I co-sponsored the one about the moratorium with Senator Allbritton, but I think when you introduce a piece of legislation as late as they did on that, it's going to run into some inherent timing problems, and so I think we're going to probably see that being a problem. There are also some of my colleagues that don't have, you know, these pressures in their particular area that are wary of infringing on private property rights, and so there are some principled objections to what those two gentlemen are trying to do statewide that cause a problem. They're not feeling the pressure we are right now, and so that causes a problem for passage as well. Look, I continue to say, and as I've said from the very beginning, you know, if you want land use control, you know, the county and the residents of Baldwin County already have that tool, and that tool is zoning. And so it is the most democratic process ever, with a petition for a referendum to then, you know, the people to vote, right? That's what we've heard an awful lot of. We want to make sure we maintain the people's right to vote. Well, here it is. If you want to regulate how somebody uses their land, we do that by zoning. The legislature has provided Baldwin County tools that most counties don't have, and that's land use tools. And so if the folks want to control this solar farm, the answer is not looking to Montgomery for a solution. The answer is you make your solution at home. You do what you want to at home. You control land at home, not in Montgomery.
Well, I guess that would apply to anything, but I look at this. I think the public is so beaten down from development in Baldwin County, and it's everything is changing. Our landscape is changing. I've been here multi-generations, and it went from, it started out as, you know, subdivisions or whatever, and now it's going to be solar farms. What's next? And some of that is just that they don't want this kind of change in their neighborhoods. But if you do something like that, I mean, does that open the gates for more restrictions on private property?
It is a fine line to walk. The important thing from a state legislative standpoint, and from my standpoint, is, and as a former county commissioner, right, you know, the local governments need the tools to be able to control land use, right, and work on what is the best way to grow and how that works within the fabric of Baldwin County. And the local governments have those tools as provided by the state legislature, right? Because they are political subdivisions of the state. They have to be provided with those tools. They have those tools. They just have to use them. And the whole county commission is up for election right now. Those are the ones that ultimately make land use decisions in Baldwin County. And so, you know, I would encourage folks to vote in the election and think about land use and growth and all of those things as you vote for, you know, your local elected officials. The important thing for me is we, the Alabama legislature, have given them the tools to manage growth. They just have to use them.
What is the risk here that, okay, something happens at the government level that says, no, thou shalt not build a solar farm? I mean, we've seen this before in some places where a municipal government or whatever puts in some kind of restriction, and then they go to court and they lose. I mean, is that a prospect here that this gets whatever the solution ends up being is challenged in court?
Yeah, there's more of a challenge with some of the legislation. You mentioned two bills in particular, Senator Allbritton and Representative Simpson have. Those have some, you know, some constitutional issues, I think, and I think the bill sponsors recognize that as well. A much safer route to go is, again, zoning and land use, right? Because that is very clearly laid out in not only the statute, but also in the referendum. And so that is a much stronger mechanism and much less likely to be challenged if they can move forward with that. It's just going to be up to those people in that particular planning district that already exists to make that decision. They're going to have to do it for themselves.
Well, even if they were to do something, does that stand the test of judicial scrutiny?
It should, yes. I do not see a legal problem with that. You know, there's an automatic moratorium, and that's why I think that's better than the legislative route. But there's an automatic moratorium that takes place as soon as the petition signatures are validated. There's a process there that has stood the test of time and has stood legal scrutiny. This is not the only development that's been pondered while a zoning referendum was going on, and so we have history and judicial or legal precedent to show that this is the route to go.
With budgets still out there, and I guess those will get wrapped up next week. But I wonder this, and there's a couple of big ticket things. We'll talk PSC or whatever. Any of that, do you anticipate any of that getting through in the next couple of weeks that we're going to be like, wow, I didn't see that coming? Or is that maybe wishful thinking?
Well, I mean, I think you've got the House bill that deals with the PSC in committee probably early next week that we'll deal with. And then you've got the budget still. I'm not sure if we move the budgets next week or we wait really to the final week for that. I know there, you know, a lot of that's probably going to depend on our Democrat friends and their posture on some of these pieces of legislation and just how much we are able to do and anything that we can, you know, kind of incentivize to keep the machine running right up until the end, because there are a lot of good bills that are going to need to get out. And as happens every single year, there are going to be frustrated members in both chambers that, and probably me included, that did not get the floor time they needed to pass their piece of legislation. That's just the nature of things. It's how it works. It's something I've had to come to accept over doing this for 8 years. I've been very successful this year. I've been very productive this year and gotten a bunch done. I'm very pleased. Don't get me wrong. It's just a matter of seeing what it all looks like at the end when the buzzer sounds.
Well, and that being said, I mean, let's talk about what the Senate looks like. We saw a little bit of a slowdown this last week and a half. What does that look like? Do you anticipate cloture and having to go that route as the days wind down?
Well, I think it's up to my colleagues, you know, my Democrat colleagues, to figure out what they, you know, what position they're in. You know, do they want to try to stop certain bills or do they want to try to stop everything? You know, if they want to try to stop everything, I don't think we have much of a choice but to end up in a closer position. If they want to, you know, try to be influential on a bill or two or three, then I think that's different. And so it's really going to be up to them to see what, you know, what position, you know, how we react to what they decide to do. But, you know, it takes, in a cloture position with the rules as they currently are, and we saw this at the end of last year. I mean, you could almost put a clock on it. It takes an hour to pass a piece of legislation when you're in a cloture position.
They make the bills be read at length. I mean, if you got to read the ETF, that's a whole day, I would think.
It can be. And so that's where, you know, that's where a lot of that's going to be up to them. And that's where, you know, the pro tem and his chief of staff and the rules chairman and their relationship with, you know, with the other side of the aisle becomes very valuable to see how, you know, what can we do within the rules. It's also, you know, there are also bills that are important to the Democrats that they want to see go. And so, you know, you kind of have to bargain with that and work the chamber. And I know this is frustrating for your listeners. Believe me, it's frustrating for me, but it is how the game works. It is the rules of the game, at least for now. And you have to, you can't use your hands in soccer. And so these are the rules we live by, and you better know what you're doing and know them well in order to operate.
But you don't really know till the day, right, what they're going to do. It's not as if it just depends on how Bobby Singleton and Roger Smitherman are feeling. I mean, I guess you have a little bit of a sense of it when you get there, but you don't know at this point what's going to happen, do you?
No, I know that we will have bills on the calendar that they don't like. I am confident that we will have things coming up that are going to be controversial from their standpoint and that they don't want to pass. I also know that we have the ability with a supermajority to pass those pieces of legislation. The question is just how are they going to react to other pieces of legislation that are still need to be passed that maybe are less controversial? Are they going to allow those to go without, you know, extended debate, or are they going to react poorly to us passing the bills that are must-pass Republican priorities and just try to slow everything down? That's where it really, you know, the decision comes to them and how they're going to react. And then we'll respond accordingly to how they react. I mean, I hate to sound anticlimactic about it, but it really is just it is dealing with, you know, the play that the other side's running and how to most effectively and efficiently manage the clock and field position to, you know, to get as much done as possible.
Well, do you anticipate this being the predicate for rules changes in the next quadrennium? I mean, the organizational session comes along and that we'll look back at this, and this will be the moment in time when they say, hey, we gotta change the way we do this. Maybe it's on local bills or whatever, that something could change.
Well, make no mistake about it, that's part of the conversation that's likely to happen with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, right? If you act like this, then the likelihood that tool is removed in the future is much greater. If you don't, then the likelihood that tool is removed is less. And so, you know, that's probably part of the calculus in the conversation that happens. And so we have an excruciating 2 weeks of having to cloture anything and everything, and we are only able to get to another, you know, 20 bills or something like that in the next 2 weeks to include the budget, then I think the likelihood of rules change in the next quadrennium is probably pretty good. If we're able to disagree on a couple of pieces of legislation and work efficiently and effectively on the rest of it, then maybe the likelihood, if it's not as painful, then maybe everybody's not clamoring for a rule change as much.
Senator, we've got to leave it there. Always appreciate your time, but we'll do it again next week.
Thanks so much. It ought to be an interesting one.
I hope not, but it probably will be. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
He said some things just glitter and shine.